Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Let's go to another topic. Alec Murdaugh just got his convictions overturned, and instead of sitting back and waiting for a retrial, his defense team did something a lot of people didn't see coming. 5 days after the South Carolina Supreme Court ruled that Becky Hill placed her fingers on the scales of justice, Dick Harpootlian and Jim Griffin walked into a federal court in Charleston and sued her personally. A 17-page civil rights complaint, $600,000 in damages, and Griffin openly admitted at a press conference that the money isn't the point. The point is to peel back the onion of Becky Hill. Subpoena power, depositions, the ability to drag people under oath and ask questions the state's own investigators never bothered to ask. To bring this down legally, strategically, and in the bigger picture of the retrial, Eric Faddis is with us to help us have this discussion. Eric, let's start here and let's walk people through the 1983 lawsuit, what it actually is. This is usually a statute used against cops and prison guards. So why is Murdaugh using it against the clerk court, and what does the defense have to prove to win going at her in this lane?
Yeah, and Tony, I've got to say, I think we all called this, whereas a lot of people didn't see it coming, but on a prior show, we had discussed this possibility.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, here we are. So viewers need to tune in on that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, for a 1983 lawsuit, what we're talking about is when the government deprives a person of a constitutional right and causes them damages. So like you said, usually that's police. Usually it's police brutality. It's excessive force. Something like that. But here, Becky Hill's still the government. She's a court clerk, man. And so if she took actions that deprived Murdaugh of the right to a fair trial, of the right to an impartial jury, of the right to due process, and that caused damages, the causation piece is a little more tricky, but he would have a valid claim, and he only has to prove it more likely than not that she deprived him of those rights and caused him damages. It's a lower standard on that civil side.
Are they? I don't want to use the word fishing expedition here, because I don't think it is. I think it's more than that. I think it's a lake that's fully stocked and they know it. And they have a fishing license to go fishing. So it's not Scott Peterson out on a nice, you know, drift away Christmas Eve morning. I'm wondering, what is the goal here? Because there's a $600 that they're asking for, and they're saying it's not going to Alec. What is the goal here? Is this to get some sort of piece of information, of evidence that they can then use in the retrial, the criminal retrial of Alec Murdaugh? What do you see them looking at here? What are they searching for as the defense attorneys of Alec Murdaugh with this civil lawsuit?
You know, anytime you have a chance as a criminal defense attorney to ethically argue that your client has been railroaded by his own government, that can be a compelling argument. Mm-hmm. And we have the retrial coming up. And so now we have this intervening civil lawsuit in which Murdaugh is saying, hey, the government violated my constitutional rights. And I think, as one of the commentators put it, I think he's got a good shot on that, case. And so is he going to be able to somehow weave that case into the new trial to say, hey, look, I have been railroaded so badly by the government that this process is so patently unfair. You can't place any faith in it. You can't condemn this guy to prison for the rest of his life. And on top of that, the discovery process in the 1983 suit, perhaps they get some new information that they can use in the second trial. And perhaps there's a question as to, well, where did that information come from? Well, it came from a civil rights lawsuit that Alec Murdaugh has against the government based on how they screwed him over before. So maybe they're angling in one or more of those directions.
Like a PR move more than anything else. I'm sorry. Go ahead,
Robin. No, go ahead. So one of the things that I've been curious about as a potential defense on this, because having lived in the government for so long, you have nonstop mandatory training. As a matter of fact, one of the things they do if an agent is in a shooting is they go back and look at your firearms qualification record, and you have to have been up on all your training in order for the government to defend you. I mean, they'll always step in, obviously, but your culpability will come down to also your currency and training, the quality of that training. Is there any way that part of her defense, whether whole or just a part, she can point to the lack of good indoctrination or training in her position, especially since she was only in the position about 3 years from what I looked at and researched?
I don't think so. I don't think that's going to save her. I think, you know, and I think her defense might be in a 1983 lawsuit, you have to show a violation of a clearly established right. And so, of course, there's a right to a fair trial. But is a court clerk saying, you know, keep an eye on the defendant or don't be tricked by the defense? Is that a clear violation of a constitutional right, or is there some gray area there? Even in the appellate ruling, you know, I don't know that they come out and expressly conclude that there was a violation of certain constitutional rights. Although I take that back. They might have, and so that might actually be even more helpful for Alec Murdoch in that, and you know, her ignorance just carelessness and how she handled that is and lack of training because of that is not going to be a defense.
Peeling back the onion is going to be interesting because you have the statements that were made. You also have Egg Lady, which is a big deal. She wrote a book too. And Egg Lady is the other juror that was kicked off, who had been there for most of the trial. And then at the last minute, Becky gets her kicked off by basically presenting what amounts to, in my opinion, lies to the judge, stating that her ex-husband posted this thing on a forum about talking with his ex-wife about the case. Turns out none of that was true. Turns out these posts were never actually made. But it was enough to get the judge to say, okay, we're going to remove you for said thing they never had. They never investigated it on the fly. I don't know that they really could have adequately investigated it on that fly as well either. So I'm not faulting the judge for kicking her off out of precaution. You have your alternate jurors. Okay. But it certainly shows that there was some motivation there to get rid of this juror that truly has said that they were on the fence about Alec Murdaugh and that she is the catalyst that pushed them away. The question being, and I know Griffin brought it up, or Harpoodle and one of them did in the press conference the other day, of was Becky Hill acting alone? Was she a lone wolf? She might have been, just because she basically offed two jurors figuratively from this trial doesn't necessarily mean, or at least one juror, doesn't necessarily mean that there's multiple people working as a conspiracy against Alec Murdaugh. But there's a lot of weirdness in this case. There's a lot of weirdness wondering, did Alec act alone? And if he didn't, if he knew something, where do you think they're going with this, with going after Becky? Do you think they're going to find that there was other people involved that had an interest in getting Alec convicted and maybe also put their fingers on the scales of justice? But does it lead anywhere further than just someone's misguided ambition for justice and what they view as justice? Or do you think that maybe there's more here? Or again, all PR makes it look a lot worse than it actually is.
Well, Tony, I can only speculate. I don't know.
Yeah.
But in terms of conjecture, you know, if you think prosecutors and the police don't have an interest in securing convictions, you're mistaken. The public's mistaken if they believe that. Because you know, although a prosecutor's duty is to seek justice and not just convictions, that's in our ethical code, actually. You better believe that they care about the outcomes of these cases, and they have resources, and they have connections, and they have access, and they have abilities that the normal person doesn't have. And have we seen prior corruption in cases like this? You know, trying to go after somebody unjustly or you know, bending the rules to try to put their finger on the scales of justice, as the court expressly indicated in the Murdoch appellate order, those things can happen. And if there was something there, then in the retrial, Murdoch can be like, hey, there is a conspiracy against me. There, my government is biased against me. They are willing to go to these underhanded measures in what amounts to criminal jury tampering. Becky Hill should be in jail. And look, it's not only Becky Hill. If they're able to find something else, I think that could get some traction in the second trial to be like, hey, there is a consortium of governmental officials who are here to lock me up, regardless of whether I did it or not. This process is patently unfair. You cannot place faith in it. You cannot convict.
It's interesting. To me, there's two different theories on it. I'm more of the simpler explanation. I think Becky's attempt in getting people kicked off that jury was probably most likely tied to her greed for making that book and trying to get goodwill from the judge, because she's trying to create a halo around herself, from my perspective. She's trying to create a halo like, you can trust me because look at, I'm so vested in doing the right thing here, so that don't look at my book over here. So I'm more of the halo end of that, but because I would think we'd get more leakage, you know, if anyone else was involved, you know, prosecutors, you know, other people, because it wouldn't be anyone on an investigative team or prosecutorial team. It wouldn't be their first rodeo of having done this, because, again, the great ethical code you guys are sworn to. So I think at some point along their careers, or at some point, people would be looking at that and be able to expose it before now.
Yeah, and clearly that would be the remote exception and not the general rule. The general rule is that those folks are just out there seeking justice.
I just think she's greedy.
Yeah.
So if I'm reading the tea leaves right, tell me from your perspective as an attorney, Eric, it seems like there's two areas that the Murdoch defense are going after. One is the reasonable doubt area, obviously. But if you're not going to have the cornucopia of financial crimes being able to be brought in, what do you replace that with? Let's go to the actual architecture of what happened here. Let's focus on the corruption of the system. Let's get that brought in as its replacement substitute, if you will, since that's no longer on the menu. And the timeline. We've already seen Griffin or Harpootlin, one of them. I remember somebody was saying the other day at the press conference, talking about the way that they identified time of death and identified the bodies by sticking they criticized the coroner or somebody, sticking his hand under the arm and saying, okay, this is when it happened. It wasn't done scientifically. It wasn't done with a thermometer. It wasn't done anally. It wasn't, I mean, these were things were actually brought up. So I'm going to guess they're going to be questioning timeline here, because the big question is going to be, if Alec had nothing to do with it, then why is he on the video at the kennels? And these people were killed like within minutes of that video. From what it sounds like, they're going to try and point, well, it wouldn't have to have been within minutes of that video. It could have been hours. They didn't actually test for time. And a long time occurred between that video and when the police were actually called. A lot of time passed there. And if Alec had just been down there and the dog was barking and then he went to go see his mom, they got killed right after that, right after he left. Maybe they saw him leave the property and thought, okay, it's time for us to come in and do our work. I'm guessing this is going to be what we're going to hear in Alec Murdoch trial number two. Your thoughts?
Totally with you on that. And at least in my experience, usually coroners and medical examiners cannot pinpoint the minute that a person died. Usually, oftentimes, cannot pinpoint the hour at which a person died. And using some sort of, just putting your hand on them, oh, they feel kind of cold. It must have been 7:36 p.m. That's ridiculous. So I think they're going to attack it on those grounds. And then also the sort of larger governmental corruption thing going against the big head honcho in the small town. They want to take him out, and they didn't have an alternative suspect, so it had to be this dude. They foregone conclusion, things like that. I think we're going to see a lot of fireworks in the second trial, and things we might not have seen in the first.
They're going to have to compete, though, on that argument, though, with the not-so-scientific death timing that the coroner looked at using his hand, with the digital timing with the phones both going silent about the same time and not moving for a period of time. Although there's some argument there, too, about how SLED processed the devices and when they were last accessed. So they got some of that to hang their hats on. It's a lot of pieces that have some meat on the bone, but it's not a full piece of meat where it's like, but if you can just satisfy the jurors enough that they got something in their snack box, maybe they will say, you know what? We did get fed here, and he's a free man. I don't know where I come up with these bizarre analogies. I feel like I sometimes I summon the ghost of Dan Rather, even though he's not dead. You know.
Yeah, those little pieces of meat can make for a really good stew at the end of the day.
Exactly.
So, so we'll have to see if that's the direction it goes.
It's going to be fascinating. Give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. And let's weigh in. We'll continue that conversation in the comment section. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, as always, thank you so much for being here. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent. And his latest book, It's Not All About Me, available wherever you get books. Go and get it right now. Until next time, for Eric, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Despiértate, que el $4 breakfast meal deal ha llegado a McDonald's. Incluye un sausage McMuffin o sausage biscuit, hash brown y un café caliente. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu meal deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play. Only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com.
Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at Chumbacasino.com.
Welcome to the family.